it's hard to explain, and I've tried all morning, and it sounds silly to say that these are the best two teams. Well, yeah, they've made it to the Cup final, but I don't think you can look at, even if you're a fan of one of the other teams that has been eliminated, I don't think you can feel ripped off. I don't think you can look at it and say, we deserve to be there more than they do. The two most deserving teams are there.
I would agree with that. I think that San Jose was a terror in the playoffs for the most part. I never got the sense, only in Nashville, did I get the sense they were ever really in trouble in a series. I thought they were dominant against the Kings. I thought for the most part they were better against the Blues. I really think, obviously, they became the best team in the Western Conference. You know, Pittsburgh, they were dominant against the Rangers. They had their, obviously, a battle with Washington, but they were the better team. And I really thought they imposed their will on the Lightning, too. Even though that series went to seven games, I thought in five or six of them, Pittsburgh was the better team. So I do agree with you. I think these are the two best teams in their conferences.
It's not, and I almost want to stop from asking, but what is the temperature in your city of Toronto about Phil Kessel? Are they allowing themselves to root for him, to cheer for him, or is he still just one of those guys that's never going to come out from under that black cloud that he was under?
Well, I think what it does is, whatever your position was before Dean, it's now even more entrenched. If you were a Kessel fan, you're saying, see, we told you that this guy was a player. But if you're not a Kessel fan, you're saying he's not a leader, and he's proven it. And look, Team USA didn't even want him for the World Cup, which I thought was crazy. I'm surprised he's not there. I look at him like, the thing about Phil Kessel is Dean, and people say, if you say that somebody's not a leader, there's people out there who treat it like that's an insult. I don't think it's an insult. I think what it is an understanding that there are three types of people. There are people who lead, there are people who are followers, and there are people who kind of are in the middle. And it's just the way we're all built. Not everybody can be a leader. And I think, you know, Kessel is one of those guys who's kind of in the middle. And you have to put him on a team where he's not expected to be one of your leaders. Here he isn't. They have their Crosbys. They have their Cullens. They have their Letangs. You know, Malkin, I'm not so sure how vocal he is in the dressing room, but obviously he's a huge star on the ice. Kessel can kind of be around, and that's the kind of situation he needs to be set up in, and that's why he's successful here.
Pinder made a comparison, and I don't know if he was not one he's going to live or die on. Would you see similarities to Taylor Hall in Edmonton? And I know that Kessel is on his third team, but could there be a situation where Taylor Hall would leave a town where it's a tough market to play in, lots of media, lots of scrutiny? He's not a leader, like you say. He's a follower as opposed to a leader, but the guy can play, is a great player, and given the right circumstance, can excel?
I wouldn't say, I mean, I could see that if he ever got traded, he would be a stud somewhere else. Yes, I could see that. But I don't think their personalities are similar. I saw a lot of Kessel, and I've seen enough Hall to know that their personalities are very different. Kessel is very quiet. He's very reserved. He's not always very comfortable in the public spotlight. Hall is, I mean, he's intense, and he's right out there, and he's not afraid to say what is on his mind, and he's much more comfortable publicly. So I would see the comparison in terms of what you lose as a player and what you risk seeing happening to them somewhere else. But in terms of a personality trait, I don't think they're comparable.
I was thinking about Chris Letang this weekend, because you start to look at the comparables and you can't help, and especially with the Team Canada snubbing, as some will say it, for the World Cup. Is he, I don't see him in that elite group. He puts up very solid numbers, but I don't think he's a feared defender. He's not imposing or overly physical. He's very good, but I don't know, is he a top 10 in the league? Is he top 15? I don't know exactly where the league sees him.
See, that's West Coast bias, because he's top 10 for sure.
West Coast bias.
So you're telling me that he should be on Team Canada then, right? Because there's got to be more than three of the top 10 defensemen not from this nation.
No, I, you know what? To me, like, Subban's getting all the love because he's not on it, but Letang is right there with him. And this is what happened. Babcock believes in that left-right stuff, and he believes in it very strongly. And when you had Doughty and Weber on, you were down to two of Burns, Pietrangelo, Letang, or Subban. And to me, Burns was the lock. So now you're down to one of Pietrangelo, Subban, and Letang. And you know what? You're going to have arguments either way. Letang, if you don't think Letang is physical, it's probably just because of, you know, he looks small. He doesn't throw huge body checks, but he's a physical player. He's very strong. PJ works out with him. He says that he's just an unbelievably competitive and intense guy, and you see it on the ice. His biggest problem is he gets too crazy. You know, he should have been suspended in the Rangers series for a slash to the face. He got away with it. He did get suspended in the Washington series. You know, he loses his temper. And I think that's the reason he didn't make the team. I'm sure Canada looked at him and said, we can't risk a bad penalty at the wrong time. But, you know, their defense as a group, look at the names. And people say, wow, how did they get here? Number one, they got here because their forwards are unbelievable. Their goaltending's been solid. And number two, it's because Letang looks at those D and he carries them. He really does. He's a great defenseman. But the reason he's not on Team Canada is the left-right balance. And you knew that there were two guys there. People were going to be unhappy if they got left off.
Would it be a different decor if they picked all seven yesterday or last week rather than the sort of staggered selections?
Maybe. You know, Weber had a really rough playoff. But especially at the end of the San Jose. Actually, he had a great series against Anaheim, and he had a bad end to the end of the San Jose series. But you're going to tell me they're going to leave Shea Weber off the team? I mean, he's won two golds. He's still an imposing presence. He had a bad end to the San Jose series, but he can play for me anytime. Who else would you take off?
I don't know. It's just, top 10 I think we see that as a type of player, but if you had to list 10, I would wonder, you know, there's some really good guys out there, OEL and Carlson, and now all of a sudden you're
Hedman.
You're close to 10 already with the Canadian blue line.
Yeah, I mean, to me, Letang was fifth on my Norris ballot this year. I went Doughty 1, I think Carlson 2, Burns 3, Josi 4, and Letang 5. Like Pittsburgh to me, they lurched through the season this year, and he was a huge reason. Like I watched them a lot. He's fantastic. He's really a heck of a defenseman.
So you had him ahead of Weber and all those guys, yeah.
I did this year. Yeah.
How do you pick apart this series? Do you go through? Because I don't know how you say. How you determine which goaltending is better. They're both young and playing their best hockey ever.
Yep.
You have stars on both sides. A bit of a wild card, I guess, would be Malkin. He's taking a rip, you know, getting ripped for not playing well. He does have 15 points, which is tied with Sid and Bonino, who are getting all the press. Do you feel like he's almost an X factor? Because they've been doing what they've been doing with him just okay. But if he can elevate, he might be the difference in a way.
I think obviously he's a huge difference maker. And the one thing that even the Penguins say about Malkin is, you know, he goes through moods, right? Like he's some days you look at him and you're like, all right, we got, you know, you can almost tell. You look at him and you say, okay, he's in the right frame of mind today. And then there's other days they look at him and they're like, oh boy, he's not in a good mood today. And then you wonder what you're going to get. When Dan Bylsma coached Pittsburgh, he used to say that a bit of here and there about Malkin was that he's had to manage the moods. But to me, like the biggest question is depth. Like the biggest advantage I think San Jose has is depth. Pittsburgh's advantage is speed, and San Jose will admit that. They talked a lot about that yesterday. San Jose's advantage to me is depth. I think they're a little deeper than Pittsburgh is, particularly on the blue line. I mean, Burns is so noticeable that, and his pairing with Martin is so good that people forget they've got another pairing with Vlasic and Braun that might be the best defensive shutdown pairing in the league. So I look at them and I say they're a little deeper. I say Pittsburgh's a little faster. I say Malkin's the X factor on one side and Burns is the X factor on the other side. If he can really go, San Jose is a real machine and difficult to stop.
Just fresh off the MasterCard Memorial Cup final, we watched Matthew Tkachuk win that last night. We in Calgary look at the home team picking at six and wonder exactly what's going to unfold ahead of us. And something you mentioned in your 30 thoughts a couple of weeks ago was that number three might not be a slam dunk that Columbus takes that. Is that, we always talk about picks moving. Is this conceivable?
I just think, I had a couple guys tell me that they think Columbus, Columbus would love to have a center. If they think Puljujarvi is a center, then it's a or can play center at points. I think it's a slam. I think it's more than likely they stay. And if they think Puljujarvi can eventually play center, it's a slam dunk lock. I've heard that I know some people who scout at the western end of Ontario. They think that Columbus likes Logan Brown too. It only depends. I think it really depends on can they get any kind of offer that's worthwhile to move down. So I would say it's extremely likely they stay and they keep the pick, but I think it's something that's on that's a possibility to consider. I still think they're more than likely than not to stay and trade and take the pick at number three.
And at four, Edmonton could do so many things given their need is one or two defensemen that can play 20 minutes this year. What do you see the Oilers in terms of options, what they have?
Well, I don't know if there is a defenseman who's going to play 20 minutes this year. I think there's some good defensemen in this draft. Sergachev, the player who won, Ulevi, who won with London last night. There's Chychrun too. I don't know if any of those guys are going to play 20 minutes this year. But Edmonton is in a lot of ways where the draft really begins. Because they've made it very clear they're willing to trade down. And I think there's going to be a lot of people who are going to want to get into that spot to get their hands on Tkachuk. I think if anything, this tournament has kind of, cemented the fact that he's number four. And who knows, maybe in somebody's eyes he's even higher. God only knows. But I think that now the draft really begins there. And Edmonton knows it, and the fact that that line had a dominant performance at the Memorial Cup, I think it only cements it. It's funny, Ryan. I was talking with a couple scouts who were out there, and they were telling me like they were having a conversation over dinner. Would Toronto ever consider trying to get all three of those guys? They've already got one. They've got Marner. Arizona has Dvorak, and they could draft Tkachuk. And I I'm stressing, I'm not saying Toronto has any interest in doing this, but I'm saying that they were telling me that there was a bit of talk among scouts and executives there. If you were Toronto, would that be something you would try and pull off? You make a deal with Arizona to get Dvorak and you put yourself in position to get Tkachuk. Now, that probably means giving up Matthews, so you might not do it. But, they were sitting there watching that line in action at the Memorial Cup and saying those guys could all be pros.
There is not a trade freeze on, as we know. Are you hearing anything?
Yeah.
Obviously, it'll ramp up after the final is over and we get closer to the draft. But any rumblings out there after last week's Vancouver-Florida deal?
Not huge. I mean, I think most guys still think it'll be closer to the draft when all this stuff starts to happen. I mean, now we're getting some more teams knocked out. And I mean, the two teams that lost in the conference finals are teams that have some big decisions to make. Both Tampa and St. Louis have some real choices they're going to have to do in order to decide to keep or partially, I wouldn't say dismantle, but put themselves in a position where they're more compliant for the cap. I mean, St. Louis obviously has two big decisions to make with Brouwer and Backes. And, you know, I wonder if Tampa's big decision is whether or not to do Hedman first. You know, he's a year away from unrestricted free agency. He's going to be probably close to a $9 million guy. And that probably, you know, I wonder, does Steve Yzerman and GMs have to look long term? Does he simply say, look, that's the contract I've got to get done first before I do everything else to let me know where I land? And, you know, I'm not saying for sure that's what he's going to do, but I could see an organization looking at it from that perspective. I mean, the other question that, you know, St. Louis has is Hitchcock. And, you know, there were some rumblings yesterday that, you know, they're gonna go to him, his contract's up, and say, you know, you worked on a one-year deal. Would you like another one? And we'll get a better idea of that tomorrow when he and Doug Armstrong meet with the media.
Yeah, it's interesting. I can't imagine they would do anything more than that, would you?
Well, I just, you know, I think the biggest question is, and Hitchcock and the Blues both know this, is that, you know, they had success this year. Do they feel that, you know, Hitchcock has admitted before that, you know, the way he grinds on players, you reach a point where you wonder if it's going to work anymore in a specific team. And it's tough because the success they had, they got within two wins of the Stanley Cup final. Normally that's a slam dunk re-signing. But I think they're kind of asking each other the question, do we feel this could work again? I thought it was interesting how he didn't go into the room after game six when they lost to say thank you. You know, he said that's the players' space, so I didn't want to get in their way, which I understand to some degree, but it does seem a little bit unusual. As for, you know, the other thing too is, I have a sense of why Calgary's job has taken a while to fill. Obviously, you know, your GM was overseas and, you know, last week he had a personal issue to deal with. But I'm wondering, Anaheim to me is a little different. I'm looking at them and I'm saying they're waiting to at least talk to somebody. And you know what? Like, this is purely speculation on my part, but I wonder if he's one of the guys that they're waiting to talk to.
Their window to win is right now. That would make sense, wouldn't it?
It does. I could see a lot of reasons why that might be a fit. But, you know, other than that, I you know, Bob Murray, he's clearly waiting to talk to somebody. And there is some logic to Hitchcock being one of those people.
Any more names in the rumor mill, or is it the same group that we keep hearing over and over again?
I think it's the same group keep hearing over and over again. I mean, the only other guy I wonder if they'd want to interview right now would be a guy like Kirk Muller.
Yeah, I wonder about him too.
And his contract is up too. And you know, you cannot underestimate the role that Muller played in St. Louis. Like, he was the buffer, and he did a really good job at it.
Good cop.
Great stuff, Elliot. Yep. Enjoy game one. We'll be watching. We'll catch up later this week.
All right. Take care. Have a great day, guys.
Yeah, you bet. There's Elliot Friedman.